Kieran and Andrew.
Thanks so much. Fantastic. I'm Andrew Reddy. I'm a postdoc at UC Berkeley. I am a political scientist. You can decide afterwards whether I can pass the Turing test. And this is my colleague, Kieran Lakaraju, who is an engineer at Sandia National Laboratory in the Systems Analysis Group. He's a computer scientist. We are part of a multi-institution collaborative project. I'm not sure this constitutes transdisciplinarity, but we definitely say interdisciplinary. We have nuclear physicists, nuclear engineers, computer scientists, social scientists like myself, all on the team, all working together to answer a nuclear question. I should say first off also, we are delighted to be back at King's College and grateful to the Wargaming Network for bringing us back. The Wargaming Network actually hosted some of the data collection that we'll talk about later in this presentation. So first of all, we are a group that's predominantly interested in studying nuclear issues. Now, studying nuclear issues is particularly difficult given that we don't have empirical data that traditionally we would kind of rely on to perform causal inference, right? So our N is 1 or 2 or 9, depending on what kind of nuclear issue you're talking about, and we have no wish to create more N, right? And so we've looked at alternative data generating processes to, in order to enable us to have insights about various nuclear decisions that might be made around capability provision and how thinking about how proliferating states impact international security and strategic stability. The ones that you're probably all familiar with, formal modeling, trying to simplify the very complex world and distilling it into some sort of formal mathematical equation, and then kind of using those formal models as the basis for running large and computer-based models. And then we also have kind of alternative DGP survey experiments that are also increasingly used in the discipline as well. We see experimental wargaming, which we'll kind of present in a second, as an additional tool to be added to the toolkit alongside these traditional approaches. Very much, again, we're a team that advocates for the mixed method approaches that that you heard about earlier on this afternoon. We think that experimental wargaming actually fulfills some of the weaknesses that come from the traditional social science methodologies, whilst also having its own weaknesses as well. So for example, formal models and computer-based models often have to make pretty significant assumptions about either information or rationality that may not hold, particularly in crisis. And so experimental wargaming gets to push on some of that. Survey experiments, one of the concerns is that I give you a piece of paper and you give it back to me in 5 minutes and there's no consequence for your answer, right? How valid is that as a tool for doing data generation? If you're putting people inside of a gaming environment where consequences are real, that consequences aspect of wargaming is, in our estimation, what defines a wargame, then you're adding an additional way in which to gather data to address these issues. So our team kind of is both providing a proof of concept and an example of how to apply wargaming to a pretty long-standing social science question. So we're asking the question of how we can use experimental wargames to examine a real-world problem. And then specifically with regards to a substantive research question, we're asking what impact might varying weapon capabilities have on deterrence and strategic stability, specifically the nuclear threshold and conflict escalation dynamics. Those constitute the DV, if you will, of our study. There's also, given that it is a lab academic collaboration in the US, a series of partnering and mentoring objectives. I'm the example of that. I'm fairly young. I got to work in Lawrence Livermore Lab for the last 18 months. We have a team of about 20, of which about 15 are undergraduate and graduate students that have all taken part in various national lab programs. So, what does the existing literature tell us about weapon capabilities and the nuclear threshold or conflict escalation? Effectively, what we have are two schools, right? You have a school that suggests that adding additional nuclear capabilities, particularly tailored nuclear weapons, may have a series of deterrence costs, right? So because these tailored nuclear weapons are potentially going to lead to lower levels of collateral damage, they become more usable. Subsequently, the argument is that they become more likely to be used, right? So here the theory suggests is adding that capability, right, decreases the nuclear threshold. On the flip side, you have a set of theories that suggest that there are benefits to adding these capabilities to the arsenal, specifically insofar as you now have a capability that can directly match whatever your adversary has, right? Strengthening deterrence, right? So again, another school of thought, adding the capability strengthens, right? Or the level of the nuclear threshold, okay? This scholarship, generally speaking, either pulls upon a very small number of cases or is entirely happening in the abstract, right? This is what we call a theory-rich, data-poor environment, right? And so we have to look to alternative ways to address this question, okay? So our basic idea was that instead of kind of trying to push on this question using traditional survey experiment method or formal modeling, right? Why don't we try to apply, you know, a practice that has been around for a very long time and try to build it into an experimental platform, right? And so I don't have to tell anybody in this room that wargaming has been around a very long time. We have an established canon about how to do this well, okay? Generally speaking, we use wargaming for a variety of services. First is analysis, right? We also use it as a pedagogical tool, right? There's a slew of different types of designs, from scenario-based discussions all the way up through matrix games and what have you. And we draw on all of those as we kind of developed our product. So what do we build? The one that we held here at King's College was the board game, of which there's a cute little picture. We stole pieces from Monopoly and Risk, among others. We stole the hex map from Civilization, Settlers of Catan, and we built effectively a structured exercise in which competition happens given the rules of the game. So we have that board, and then using those board game rules, we also have an online environment. Because this is one of the first instantiations of wargaming used as an experiment in a large end setting, we also wanted to benchmark against other methods. So we have a fairly traditional Signal TTX, three teams of eight in a kind of tabletop exercise kind of scenario. We had an adjudication team of white cell that kind of moved that scenario forward, but they tried to push on some of the same dynamics that we're exploring in the board game and the online game. And then we have a signal survey experiment that actually tries to take what is a very complex environment inside the war game and basically take respondents through a kind of three-stage experiment there, where again, we are varying the capabilities that we're giving the players and looking at how those impact our two dependent variables of interest, right? Conflict escalation and the nuclear threshold. So the game map is shown here. You'll notice that we don't use blue and red. We don't use real countries. We beta tested this map quite a lot. And in that process, we discovered two kind of pernicious behaviors that we wanted to try to avoid. The first of which is that if you use real countries and you don't have people coming from those countries to play the game, people tend to caricature. So as soon as we had a red cell, the Gerasimov doctrine miraculously started to occur. That's escalate to de-escalate, right? And that's not the type of thing you want to happen, right? You want it to be kind of a pure strategy, right? I want to know what my respondents are doing inside the game. We also used to have the green country a little bit higher and the orange and purple a little bit lower, a little bit more kind of horizontal. And our players said, well, hey, green's the US, orange is Europe, and purple is Russia, right? This is not what we're trying to do, right? We want the map to kind of stand by itself, right? We don't want players to try to bring things from outside the game. You heard a little earlier about the inner and the outer game. We don't want the outer game to influence the gaming behavior. That said, the game is designed to, you know, use a lot of important elements of war games, whether those be military actions, economic actions, or diplomacy. And we are interested in a series of behaviors and mechanics that are, you know, fairly normal for those of you that study strategic studies. So from bargaining to signaling to uncertainty to cooperation, deterrence, right? All of these are mechanized in the game, and all of them happen. Indeed, just aside from the experimental side, one of the kind of neat ways in which we kind of built the game was to have a signaling phase where we could actually really drill down on costly signaling and what those dynamics look like inside of a gaming environment. Okay, just as far as kind of what the capabilities look like in kind of the game design, players are given a variety of military capabilities, from traditional nuclear weapons to high precision low yield nuclear weapons to EMP nuclear weapons. Conventional forces from land-based infantry to naval attacks. We have cyber capabilities in the game. defensive capabilities, and these are some examples of what those cards look like for the board game. And we use that card-based mechanism in the online game as well. And each kind of round that we play has three phases. The signaling phase that I mentioned, in which players are placing signaling tokens on the board that defines where they can take action. And then in the action phase, they'll actually go about taking those actions. The signaling phase is a free-for-all, right? So you can play signaling tokens, engage in diplomacy at any time. The action phase is sequential, but we use a dice roll or a random number generator online to make sure that the same player doesn't go first every time, right? We don't want to kind of bake in a first mover advantage. And then we have an upkeep phase where we account for the results of the round. And we're happy to talk about any of those things, either in the Q&A or after the presentation. So I'm going to turn it over to my colleague, Kieran, who will take you through some of the experimental design principles that are embedded inside the game environment.
Thank you. So let me talk a little bit about signal. We're here to talk about data capture. So I want to describe a little bit about how and what data we're actually capturing within signal. So we created using experimental design principles. We view it as a two-factor between subjects design. So a group of subjects is going to be given a treatment of being the treatment or the control condition. And by the way, this is all IRB approved. We did go through this is considered human subject studies and human subject research. So we have gone through that process to get the ethical approval to run this as an experiment. In the board game, it takes about 2 to 4 hours to play, but the online game takes about 1 to 1.5 hours. And there's a couple key design elements that we wanted to emphasize in order to allow us to follow through on this more experimental principle approach. So one of them was an abstract environment. So as Andrew mentioned, we chose abstract countries. We wanted to reduce the impact of cultural stereotypes and role-playing within the game. We wanted people not to think that they were playing a country, but rather to think about the strategies within the rules of the game. We also incorporated minimal stochasticity. So our goal was not to understand how the players were thinking about and assessing the probability of an action, but rather thinking about the decision they made on whether to escalate or de-escalate or other conflict-related actions. And so in order to do that, we reduced the stochasticity. We provided multiple avenues for winning. So our goal was not to give the subjects just like two options and say, which one do you choose, but to allow them to have multiple options in order to engage them further. And I view this as a trade-off. When we're building a game for experimental purposes, you want to engage. And so you want to provide avenues and ways that players can actually think about things and have multiple ways of achieving a goal. But that also creates a complexity. And so trading that off is very important as we designed this game. Critically, we also don't have a white cellar adjudicator. So the rules are provided to the players, and we've designed the rules, so we've had input on that. And facilitators during the data collection are there to help them understand the rules. But there's no white cellar adjudicator because we don't want to provide bias into the play. So it's something that I think Neil mentioned in his talk earlier in the psychology section about the bias that comes in from multiple humans interacting in this type of game, and we try to minimize that. More broadly speaking, we're striving for experimental war games to hit these principles, replicability and reproducibility. We want our game to be able to be played multiple times with many different types of people, and we've tried to do that here by having the game go online as well. So it's online and anyone can play across the world. We want to be able to have fine controllability. We want to be able to manipulate the variables and the situation for the subjects. We want to be able to be clearly instrumented. So Andrew mentioned the signaling phase in our game. And one of the reasons that we did that was as a benefit to be able to actually capture threats between players. So you can threaten players in Monopoly. You can threaten each other and do that. But they're often vocal, right? You interact with each other. Here, through the signaling phase, where you have to indicate where and potentially what threats you're going to place, we've actually taken that and made it something that we can capture data on. And that was intentional in order to actually get that data. we want to be neutral, so we don't want to be involved in pushing the game in any particular direction. We provided that through the rule set, and we understand that there's going to be bias, that we are putting our own biases into the rule set, but once there, the players can make their own strategies. And critically, as I said, we're trying to hit this balance of how do we make sure that our game has enough fidelity, captures and distills the key concepts that we're trying to understand, but enough complexity that it is interesting to the subject, engaging, and captures the complexity of the real world. So we have the board game, and yes, thank you, Colin. We are showing the board game at the Games Fair, so please come up and play. And we also have the online game, which is up and it is available for you to play online as well. And we've gotten several hundred plays since May 2019, and we'll be keeping it up so you can go ahead and play too. So there's a couple questions that are going to come up. If you're going to talk about capturing data from subjects playing a game, one of the things that often comes up is, you know, players are going to learn the game and they're going to try to explore in the initial plays of the game. And we try to mitigate that by having an exploration phase, which we can't see here. But the exploration phase within our data capture. So this is a schema of what we do in a board game playthrough, where we describe the rules to give everyone a similar starting point. We provide an exploration phase in which they can explore and hopefully understand the game. And then a randomization phase where we randomize the players and then we do data collection. Data collection in our game is actually player-led. And this is to scale. We can't have 100 rapporteurs coming around trying to capture data from every game that we play. We have to live with the player actually collecting data, which does induce some error, but we have to work with that. So we've deployed Signal, the board game, in several places. And one of the ones I mentioned is at King's College London, thanks to the Wargaming Network, who hosted us here. But also at San Diego, at the Project Nuclear Issues, and at Berkeley. And I want to mention that what we can do then, if we can collect this data from this game, is start to think about a quantitative analysis of the behaviors within our game, within our model of the world. So what I have here is actually where players make threats on the game. So there's three players, orange, purple, and green, and the colored circles indicate where they've actually made threats. So for instance here, you can see green made 4 threats, purple made 9 threats, yellow made 2 threats. And so we're able to capture that. And we can start to identify broad patterns within the game. So things like, oh look, there's going to be conflict on contiguous borders, and conflict in proxy states, for instance. And this was this allows us to consider and to analyze the game and think about how it reflects broad patterns in the real world. Critically, we can also understand trends and process data from the gameplay. And so what we can do is look at how players actually move through behaviors within the game. And we can capture that data through the ability of looking at different actions that players do over time. I'm not going to get into the details of this, but what I just want to say here is that this maps out for the different conditions, control and treatment, the types of progression of actions that players do over the 40 or so board games that we've collected. And so we can start to try to map out the differences in the control and treatment conditions in a quantitative manner to see what could happen. I want to end with the fact that we view this as the beginning, as and part of a broader vision for enhancing the study of conflict. What we really want to get to is understanding strategy analytics. We feel a critical way to get to that, is to develop what we call informed conflict models. Conflict models that take on and inherit the insights from behavioral science principles, but also from real conflict data, things like the correlates of war, MIDS data sets, but also synthetic observational data from things like massively multiplayer online games, and synthetic experimental data, which is where we're focused on with Palm. And we believe that there are ways to put these methods, put these types of data together in a reasonable and in a manner that does not, that oversells each of the data, and in a way that allows us to respect the importance of real conflict data. And there's machine learning techniques that, that I think can help with that, things like transfer learning and whatnot. If we can bring those together, what we have is a powerful new model, what we call these informed conflict models, that can help us understand conflict better and help us to anticipate and understand and better approach the world. Along with that, there's the URL for our e-game. You can go ahead and go there if you would like. We will be upstairs. We also have fancy little stickers, so you can come and get the URL. You don't have to look for it in the presentation. Thank you.